I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast. Rob, are you excited to be wasting another Sunday talking to me?
Well, Nate, to tell you the truth, yes, I am. I don't get a chance to waste Sunday nights talking pool with anybody, really. Nobody calls me and asks me about pool, talks pool, and I love it. I mean, I love the game. I don't love not being called and talked to, but... So, this gives me an opportunity to talk about pool a little bit. And hopefully the listeners don't mind that.
I would hope that if they're listening to this podcast that they enjoy hearing about pool. Or if not, what are you doing here? I suppose there are some people that do listen that have zero interest in pool at all. So I guess shout out to Alicia. She got mad at me last week for not shouting her out when she had a perfect opportunity to be shouted out. So here you go.
Well, it was because Cody did. He shouted out to all the spouses out there, all the better halves, all the lady pool players and the men pool players out there that have to put up with the crying and whining when we don't win, and the bragging when we do, and being lonely if they don't come with.
And that was the exact shout out that she was yelling at me for not giving her.
I bet it was.
Because she does listen, and I could have pointed that out, but I didn't, and she yelled at me. So I guess...
Okay, what do we got tonight?
Yes, Nate, we can jump right in, and I will actually give the second review for the billiard gloves. I got to use the McDermott glove for the last 2 weeks now, and I actually really, really, really liked it. It was a little bit more expensive than the Predator one that I reviewed before. This one was, I think, $26.99, which is $2 more than the other one. But
okay.
In the 2 weeks that I've used it, the finger lengths are a little bit longer. If I had any complaints on the Predator one, the thumb length was not quite far enough to actually cover up the point on the thumb that I wanted covered up. And the McDermott one is significantly longer to where it actually covers up pretty much your entire finger, which is kind of nice.
Well, that's an individual thing, though, for sure.
Yes.
I mean, your hands may not be a normal. They might not be normal, is what I'm saying. The rest of you isn't. So why would your hands be normal?
Thanks, Rob. You're a sweetie. But so I guess if I'm going to rank them now, I actually do like the McDermott one more. I have not used it for a long time, so I don't know how the durability is for it. That kind of goes for the Predator glove as well, because I have not use that one for a long period of time either. But as I use these more in the future, I will kind of follow back and say if one of them falls apart sooner than what I think it should, I will point it out. But as of right now, the McDermott glove is my new number one. My number two is the Predator.
Ooh.
And the number three, which is not super far back, but definitely there's a separation between the McDermott and the Predator glove, is the Molinari glove. And the only reason I put it back a little ways from those two is because I've used it for, I guess, 2 months now, and it's basically destroyed. So 2 months for a glove, I don't know if that's normal. I know that there's some crappier gloves that I've had in the past that have fallen apart well before that. But for what I feel like the amount of time that I've played the game, I feel like it probably should have held up a little longer than 2 months. So I guess I will reassess this as I get 2 months in with any of the other gloves. And maybe that's, you know, just pretty normal. But until
how many hours is that? You know, I mean, if you use a glove for a week, how many hours you get in on that glove?
Well, this is kind of the weird
normal part. Week.
Yeah, this is kind of the weird part about my game, right? Because I'll go for 2 weeks and I'll play, you know, 30 hours a week for both of those, and then I won't play 30 hours in the next 4 months combined. So I'm kind of an anomaly like that. But the 2 months there was a lot of play in there, actually. There's quite a bit of play. So and I don't know exactly whether it is the taking it off and putting it back on that is the most strenuous part of the glove as far as durability, or whether it is, you know, just the normal wear and tear of the stroke. I feel like putting the glove on and off would be significantly more strenuous to the durability of the glove than anything else. So
how about if you side slap your opponent or something with it? Does it hold up pretty good to that?
Well, it depends what time of the day it is. I'm assuming for like a 5 o'clock, shadow, it'd be a little bit more prickly. Maybe it'd break it down a little bit quicker than if it was in the morning. Smooth shaven face. Yeah. So that was the dumbest response.
And if they have glasses on or anything like that, then of course you have to factor that in.
Of course.
Yeah.
That was easily the dumbest response I've ever given to a question. Easily.
Good.
So I guess, those are the three rankings. First place is McDermott. Second place, very close though, is Predator. And then a semi-distant third is the Molinari Glove. The next one on the list is, I believe it's called Viper Glove. So I am going to start on that one now. And I should be done with that, I suppose, probably in the next week to 2 weeks. And I will give my review on here of the Viper Glove, which is a cheaper one. The Predator one was, I think, $24.99 or $25.99, and then the McDermott was $26.99. So this one, I think, is about $17. So a little bit cheaper. We'll see if the durability and the value is better for that or not. So I will let you know in a couple weeks. Other than that, we can jump into the shout-outs. Rob, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I have an unusual shout-out tonight. Last week I shouted out to all Canadians, and then I gave a special shout out to the pool playing Canadians. Well, tonight I'm going to narrow that down a little bit more. And this person I shout out to, I hope that he or somebody that knows him will get back to us so that I can know his name. Because it just at the present time eludes me. I just met him that one year, and this is back, back in 2008, 09, 10, back in there sometime. And again, it was at the BCAPL tournament at the Riviera when it was held every year there. And it was in the, I believe, the open singles division. And he was a Canadian Native American. His name might have had the word feather in it. I'm not his last name, but anyways, it was very unusual, and I'd never had this happen to me before in my whole entire life of playing pool. But we're playing for I think it was maybe 17th through 24th place. It was up in the money, pretty good, $300-$400 anyhow for the loser, and then a chance to go play for of course 12th through 16th. And it was 4-4, and it was his break. And he turns to me and he says, "Rob, do you want to split?" And I said, "You mean the rest of the way in the tournament, no matter what happens?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I went, "Well, gee whiz, this was a pretty good player I'm playing. He run a few racks and was 4-4 and we're playing to race to 5. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not breaking. He's a pretty good player. I got to go. Yeah. To this. So I do. I said, sure. I'll do that. And I really didn't know this fella at all, but it seemed honorable, whatever. And a nice guy. And we chit chatted a little bit during the match. So I didn't really get to know him, but somewhat. And he broke and ran out. And I went, congratulate him. I said, oh, wow, great. I hope you do well in the rest of the tournament. And I didn't really forget about it, but I didn't right away follow it, I thought, well, okay, tomorrow I'll look and see how he's doing. And the next day I looked, and he had won his next match. So he was guaranteed 12th through 16th, and then he won his next match. So now he was going to be playing for, that was 9th through 12th, and he won that match. So then, now he's two matches further on down the road, and now he's playing for 7th and 8th place. And so I went and watched part. I stood back so he couldn't see me watching, so I was out of view. I didn't want him, I didn't want my presence interfering with his concentration or whatever, being there, making him nervous in some way. Although he is the kind of pool player that didn't look like he got nervous. But anyways, he did not win that match, I don't believe. But anyhow, he had gone two matches and got up in the money pretty good. like around, I don't know, $1,400-$1,500 he made. So maybe he did win 7th and 8th and then lost 5th and 6th. But anyhow, I saw him and his wife, and I said, geez, way to go, congratulations, shook his hand. And I didn't say too much other than, when do you expect to get, you know, your money for this? Thinking that he's just going to get his money and I'm never going to see him again, right? And not really thinking that I was going to get half of what he made. And sure enough, it was the next day, he came and found me playing. I had told him what team I was on out there that year, and he came and found me in the team, and he gave me his half of what he had made. So I made another, it was like $700 or $800 that he handed me. And I thanked him, but I want to thank him again. And I just can't remember his name, but he was a Canadian, Native American. I do know that, and I believe from Alberta. So if any listeners out there from Canada know this fella and want to get him to call in, and if I knew his name, I'd shout out his name. But here again is another example of a pretty honorable, very honorable Canadian pool player.
So
thanks, whoever you are.
Yeah, if he made about $1,400, he gave you half of it, $700.
Yes.
Just a moral question.
And I gave him half of mine, what I made for losing, you know, for winning 17th or 24th place.
Yes.
It was like $350 or $450 or something like that.
So, question then. Okay. How did you handle that as far? Did you tip him for making it farther, or did you just chop it half?
I believe I did. I believe I gave him some money for a dinner for him and his wife and thanked him again, you know, for being straight up.
Yes. And this is actually a discussion topic that I wanted to have today about Calcuttas, but this was kind of a fun lead into that. So I think I would tip too. I think I would probably tip close to 30% on that, 30 to 40% maybe. If the money was significant, like if
it was pretty significant.
Yeah, if you got $400 and he got $1,700 or something like that, I think I would. I don't know what I would do.
I think it was something like $350 and $1,400 or something, you know, like that. It was a good deal of dough.
Yeah, so the difference was about $500 that you made on top of that. I think I'd probably take $200 and be pretty happy with it. So
yeah, no, I'm too cheap for that. But
yeah. Well, I mean, $200 of the $500 that was,
right.
Or no,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. If there's $500 coming, I think I'd probably take $300 of it, and, you know, hand it, you know, probably $200 of it back. But I don't know. I don't know that that'd be true.
Kind of well, depends. That's a topic we can have for a discussion topic.
Yeah, and that actually gets into what I was going to talk about later. But so I guess I can get to my shout out. I am going to give my shout out this week to Rodney Morris, the Rodney Morris. Because he was at the High Desert Shootout this weekend, and he wore a Cue It Up t-shirt, and somebody sent me a picture of it. How cool is that? That Rodney Morris was playing in a Cue It Up t-shirt in the High Desert
wow.
Shootout. How exciting
wow.
is that?
What's his nickname?
The Rocket. Rocket.
Right? The Rocket Rodney. Yeah. Thanks, Rodney.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. A little surge of happiness I got from seeing that.
I bet you did.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess with that, we can jump right into the podcast. Wisconsin's upcoming events will be brought to you by the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame weekend is fast approaching. Join us on October 11th through the 13th in Beloit, Wisconsin. Jeffrey Carter, David Jacoby, Randy Lamar, and Frank Stelman will be inducted on Friday evening at La Casa Grande. Registration for the banquet can be found on wibhof.org. The Saturday and Sunday tournaments are half full already, so please don't wait to get your registration in for them and miss out. See you all in October at Cole's Karam Room. So there were a couple of events in Wisconsin this week. One of them was the Hog Pens Chill Fest Singles Handicapped 8-Ball, which had Rob Kendall getting first place over Mo McDonough. Michael Perrin Jr. gets third place over Shane Heath. The next tournament we'll talk about is the Vibes 2
Women event. You know what Shane's nickname is?
I got a feeling I'm about to.
Radar.
Radar, huh? I don't think I know Shane.
Yeah.
I'm friends with them on Facebook, but yeah. I don't think I've spent a lot of time around them.
Yeah. Nice guy.
So, there was a Vibes 2 Women event, which had Renetta Spears and Barb Arndt getting first place over Danya Bundy and Kanya Hendricks. Lynn Vanden Landenberg gets third place with Andrea Johnson. And the last tournament that we will talk about was the 1800 and under three man at the Portage Ballroom, which had Dan Mosier, Nick Karachi, and Toby Mueller getting first place over Mario Madrid, Caden Hunkins, and Johnny Rodriguez. Third place goes to Matt Strong, Mike Gans, or Jose Aviles. And those were all of the events for Wisconsin. Let's move on to the upcoming events. Wisconsin's upcoming events will be brought to you by Jeff Glaza and CBD for Life Global. Several years ago, Jeff challenged himself to be the best pool player he could be. He quickly learned three things. It was going to take a lot more work than he thought, the game was mostly mental, and that he did not play well enough in pain and or being in an unhealthy state of mind. For over 20 years, Jeff has been interested in a more natural approach to health. One day, a couple years ago, while doing research, he discovered CBD as a natural way to reduce the effects of anxiety. After taking CBD regularly, he began to experience life-changing results not only with less anxiety, but also less muscle and joint pain, and the bonus of a more restful sleep. CBD is now a major part of his life and goals of being as healthy as possible and continuing to enjoy and excel at the game. Jeff would like to invite you to share in the amazing benefits of CBD and find out how it could benefit your life and game as well. He invites you to text him anytime at 715-887-2550 or follow the link on my website and you will find over 70 high quality products delivered to your door that all come with an empty bottle, 60-day money back guarantee. So there's only one big event coming up this week, and that is the Fox Valley Diamond Team Challenge. And for anybody who's not from Wisconsin, this is a pretty neat team event that could potentially be transferred to your state. It is a it's between two different pool halls, and there are 32 teams in it with $3,000 added. And it is four-person teams of 2,350 Fargo maximum. There is a $250 entry fee, and then there are two 16-team brackets that are split up between two different pool halls, and each day plays down to the top six players, and then the second day is merged all into one at one of the pool halls, which has a redraw for the Calcutta at that time with a Calcutta in the beginning too. So there should be a pretty large amount of money in this event with between two Calcuttas and $250 entry fee. Rob, you're not playing in this, right?
I can't play. I had a pinched nerve in my neck. I can't play pool until it gets better.
Yeah, I'm not playing either.
Pool's the one thing that aggravates it more than anything. Even you don't aggravate it.
I'll have to step up my game, I guess.
I don't know. But yeah, I can't get down on the table and pick my head up.
Yeah.
If I was like 8 feet tall and I could just lean over the table and shoot, I'd probably be okay. But no, until I get that taken care of and under control, my pool's done.
Yeah, so I guess that is the only event coming up, so we can move on to the pros. So there was a big, well, semi-big matchup that we can talk about first, briefly, which was Scott Frost and Nick DeLeon. And this was just a race to 25 at Scott's pool hall in, I want to say it's in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freezers in Phoenix, and they just played a race to 25 10 ball winner breaks, and Nick ended up winning, I think 25-19. I didn't watch any of it, so we won't talk too much about it, but
that's a great pool hall.
Yeah, I've never been there, but
kind of a featured tables, but one kind of up front by the bar with seating on, I think there's seating on four sides of it, around it, like bar-type seating around it. Yeah, feature table, and quite a few pretty decent money games on it with some good local players. I sat one afternoon and watched a couple of guys battle it out, one pocket for most of the afternoon there last winter. I liked it. Nice place, upscale.
Yep, I will have to make a emphasis to get down there at some point in time if I'm ever in the Phoenix area.
Yeah.
But so that happened. We can move on to the Dream Challenge, which was between U.S. and Russia, and it is a Moscone Cup-style event. I regret to say that I did not watch very much of this, almost hardly at all. Being a college student again means that I am way more busy than I want to be, and I just didn't have time this week. It was a crazy week with a couple of exams and a couple of really big assignments, so I did not get to watch much of it. But the U.S. does win, and I believe they won 11-9, if I'm not mistaken. Did you watch any of that, Rob?
Pretty close. No, I can't watch. If it was on TV, I could have watched. And sometime in the future, if there's anybody on this podcast, like maybe the guy who runs it and edits it and directs it, could come up to my home and hook me up with some type of, you know, some type of communication so that I could sit at my TV and watch pool, I would do it. But I can't do it on my computer. It hurts my neck too bad.
Something so tells me that you
I didn't
are,
watch either.
Something tells me that you are trying to get me to get you the hookups with everything.
Oh, no, no. I wouldn't put any pressure on you like that. I have nothing to trade. I don't have any missiles to sell you.
Fair. I will try to make that happen, Rob, just for you.
Yeah, so no, I really didn't watch much of it either.
So I can't find a bracket on this. I don't know if it exists somewhere, and I just can't find it, but I don't know exactly what happened in the High Desert Shootout. I know that Shane Van Bonin gets first place over Billy Thorpe, and I think Corey Duell and Rodney Morris finished pretty high up in the field as well, but I can't find a bracket, so I don't have necessarily the time to sit around and research and try and find all of this stuff. So I am going to just say that Shane wins and move on to what's coming up. So I am not finding any big events for the pros coming up this week. There are a bunch of money matches that are going to be coming up in the next few weeks that we're going to be able to talk about at that point. So,
okay.
But at this point, I do not see any big pro events that are happening this week.
Wow. That's too bad. We're coming into pool season too. Leagues are starting up. You got leagues starting in your area?
We do. We are back into full-fledged pool mode, and it is interesting. So, I guess
I couldn't play the first night, so I don't know.
So I guess we can move on to the end of the podcast.
Wow, already?
I know, it's wild.
It seems like we just started. There's not
wild,
much to talk about this week, huh?
Not much. So let's I guess, do a discussion topic. And this is the discussion topic that I wanted to have. So I had a discussion this weekend at the pool tournament that is basically, if I buy somebody in the Calcutta and they, let's say, end up winning it, and they do not want any of their action. So if I buy them for $100 and they don't want to get their half for 50, what do you do at the end of the tournament with the money that you've made? Rob, what would you do?
I take the money that I made. I buy the guy dinner. I buy him a drink unless he's already hammered. And I give him a tidbit. You know, I give him one of Rob's tidbits. Like, next time, buy 25% of yourself, you know, or something. But there are players there that don't want that extra stress on themselves. They don't want that extra pressure on themselves. They you know, they'll play in a tournament because what the tournament does is subdue personal pressure in performing, unless you have a bet on yourself in the tournament. There's other people that love that. They perform better if they know there's more at stake. So they do it on themselves. They'll buy themselves. There's a lot of guys that buy themselves at tournaments. They don't want somebody to buy half of them. They bid on themselves. Billy Lizzie is one of them. You know, they bid on themselves, hoping they get themselves because they know they'll play better. Then there's the guys that just are the opposite. They don't. The less pressure they have on themselves, the better they play. But yeah. if I buy somebody and they win, I give them a few bucks, you know, whatever. Depends how much I win and how much it costs me to buy them.
Yeah.
You know.
And I actually have a pretty firm stance on this one. If I buy you for, let's say, we'll keep it nice round numbers. If I buy you for $100 and you say that you do not want any of it,
mm-hmm.
you have made an active choice not to participate in the Calcutta. I understand very much that some people have hard times and they cannot necessarily afford, let's say, if I buy somebody for $500, they can't necessarily afford $250 to play in a pool tournament, and I totally get that.
I
completely understand that.
But if they go for $500, they're a pretty good player.
Yes, of course, yeah. Of course. The idea that I have there is if I buy you for $60 and you do not want your half, you do not want a sixth, you do not want any part of yourself, then you are actively choosing not to partake in the Calcutta, and I do not feel obliged in the slightest to tip you out at all.
No, you shouldn't.
And I don't. I will not tip you out if you do not get any of yourself. With that being said, if I buy you for $100 and you're like, well, you know, I'd really like to get some of myself, but I just don't have the cash flow on me. Here's, you know, $20. Let me get a fifth of myself. Yeah. I will tip you out as if you bought half of yourself. I get the idea that, you know, some people just don't have the cash flow and that's fine. But if you are not going to even try to get even a tiny chunk of yourself, that means you do not want to partake in the Calcutta, and I'm not going to tip you out because actively choosing not to partake in the Calcutta. I have a pretty
I can understand that.
Yeah, I have a pretty firm stance on that one, and I do that a lot too. I don't get my half, and it's not super rare that I won't get my half, but it's not uncommon.
You know,
for me
you're
to
a $60-$80 player. You know, I mean, if you're in that category. In a tournament, say with 40 players there, and you go, the highest player is going for 300, and you're in the 60-80-100 deal, and you end up in second place or third place, you've had a great tournament, you know, for that. And if somebody's bought you and you haven't bought any of yourself back, you weren't expecting to go that high, to finish that high. So it's probably just you're probably happy, and it's probably a treat for you to just be there and see your name in lights at third place or fourth place. And you really, the guy who buys you, fine, you go ahead and keep all the money. You know, they're probably happy with that anyways. And don't expect you to treat them to a $20 bill or a $50 bill.
Yeah. If they came up to me, probably if they came up to me at the beginning of the Calcutta, or if they came up to me after me buying them and say like, hey, I would love to get myself, but I have $25 and I got to eat twice today. I would know what their at least intentions are to be in the Calcutta. They just don't have the financial opportunity to. I'll tip out then. But if you just say no, I'm not interested, then I think that you're not interested in in partaking. And if you're not interested in partaking, then don't come to me when you have when you've won me money and you now want to cash in on that. You weren't interested then. Why are you interested now? So that's I have a pretty firm stance on that one.
Yeah, that's cool. Have you ever? I actually witnessed somebody who told the person that bought them they weren't going to give them anything. Okay, and then at the end of the tournament, when they got like fifth, sixth place, or the lowest you could get on the Calcutta, come up to that same person and say, "Where is my money?"
Well, here's a story for you.
Where's my share?
And
the guy said, "Well, you didn't give me anything." He was, "Yeah, I did." The guy actually said, "Yeah, well, yeah, I did. Yeah, I bought a quarter of myself."
Yeah. Here's
the other guy said, "What are you talking about? No, you didn't." And then there was argument ensuing and name calling and all kinds of stuff happening. And I went, "Well, what is going on with this guy?" And he's done it. This same person has done this. I won't name his name, but he's done it at other tournaments too.
Well, here's a story for you. I won't say the name. I'll mention to you off air. But there was a tournament a couple weeks ago that somebody was bought in the Calcutta, and they gave basically like a sixth. They bought a sixth of themselves, so they bought a third of their half, and they won their first three matches. And then they went up to the person that bought them, and the person that bought them was just basically somebody who was. She was a bartender, and she basically reached out to somebody there, and she's like, you know, who should I buy in this Calcutta? I want to, you know, invest a little money and see, you know, sweat the tournament.
Right.
And the person gave them this person's name, and she ended up buying them. And that person ended up winning the tournament. And he, like I said, he put a sixth of the money into his Calcutta buy. And then he came up to her, I think after his third or fourth match on the winner's side that he had won, and paid the rest of it. And she didn't know any different. So she just thought that, you know, she's just buying the rest of his hat.
No. You can't do that.
No, you cannot do that. And he did this. And I mean, this is the story that I heard, so I don't know that it's true.
He gave the money to the person who was running the Calcutta. He just went and gave it to them.
He gave it to her.
Here's the rest of my half. Well, yes. He gave it to her.
Yes.
She didn't know any better and took it.
She did not know any better. Well, she just wanted to sweat the tournament, basically. And this person decided that he would take advantage. I don't know what he was thinking.
So he robbed her.
Regardless, he took advantage of her. Her lack of knowledge towards it. And, you know, that's... You know, that's
where is the respect?
Kind of goes into the same thing, the story you just said. So that's a pretty interesting one. That's
where's the honor?
I don't know. So,
oh, boy.
But I guess that can kind of wrap up our discussion on that. We can now head over to your tidbits.
These today, every once in a while, I like to go to like factual things, not necessarily funny. They're just kind of weird, bizarre, amazing, truthful facts. And because, I don't know, I like that kind of stuff. But on April 11th, 1954, it was dubbed by I don't know who the most boring day in history. Now, why could that be? Well, of course, because nothing important happened on that day. Absolutely nothing. In world, national events, nothing. Now, for the person who was born on April 11th, 1954, or every person that was out there, if that's your birthday, this doesn't count, okay? It was rather unusual because nothing important happened, except if you're born on that day. Okay, here we go. Winston Howes, he's a farmer in South Gloucestershire, England. Now, if you live in England and you're listening to this, you might be interested. Planted 1,000 oak trees and created a heart-shaped clearing out of these 1,000 oak trees as a tribute to his deceased wife, Janet. What a nice thing to do. I wonder if she got to see it.
Wow.
Nate, did you know that elephants can't jump? And neither can three-toed sloths, rhinoceroses, or hippopotamuses.
Those all kind of make sense.
Okay. Did you know that if you eat a polar bear liver, now, granted, you can't kill polar bears, but if you happen to find one and cook it up, there's a very good possibility you could die. And it's kind of a horrible death. Your skin peels off your body, and you just, you die from an overabundance of vitamin A. Of which humans can't handle a lot of that. Do you have any idea how much one testicle of a blue whale can weigh?
I do not.
It's 100 to 150 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. This was interesting. Back in the Romans drove these chariot races, right? Around that oval thing like Charlton Heston did. And there is something they drank, like we have this energy drink now that we take to stay awake, 5-hour energy, and some of these other ones. And here's what it was. It was boiled vinegar and goat muck.
What is goat muck?
I have no idea what goat muck is. But I know that Vaseline was made from oil well drilling mud sludge. And don't ask me how I know that. Okay, a flea can jump 350 times longer than its own length. Now, you got to know how long a flea is to imagine that, but to put it in human terms, that would mean you, Nate Mindum, jumping over 3 airplanes. Now, I don't know what size airplanes they are. That doesn't say, but there you go. And this I found really interesting. I told a shark story here, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, whatever, with a young man that lost his arm and got it put back in when the dad went and got the shark out of the water and beat it to death, got his arm back. Well, this one, a girl in 1971, Julianne Kepke, she was a 17-year-old German-Peruvian girl, was flying with her mother over the Amazon rainforest. The flight was the Lanza Flight 508. Okay, it got struck by lightning in a heavy rainstorm, and the plane blew up in midair. She was 10,000 feet up in the air at the time, and the forces of the explosion ripped her out of her seat, out of the plane, and she fell to Earth. She was on Earth, and in a few hours after, she woke up in a few hours. She had some injuries. During the free fall, she had a concussion, a broken collarbone, a cut in her legs, some torn ligaments in her knee. She lost her glasses. One eye was partially disabled. And she then woke up, got out of her airplane, strapped in airplane seat, and was looking unsuccessfully, of course, for her mother, who was sitting next to her. Couldn't find her mother. But she had remembered what her father had said about if she ever gets lost in a jungle. And that was to find which way the water is flowing. If you find a stream, just follow it. And eventually, if you follow it, it'll go into bigger stream than a river. And most likely, at some point in time, you'll find a human somewhere. And she did that. It took her 10 days of walking through the rainforest, following these river, small creeks and rivers, without her glasses and an injured eye. She was dressed in a mini skirt with one sandal on her foot. She finally found some people, and they took care of her. And she survived that plane explosion in midair. It was 1971, 17-year-old girl. So how about that for a story? Wow. That's as good as the shark story. And how do sharks take a pee? Do you know that?
In front of the urinal?
No, they urinate. Well, no, the shark urinal. No, they actually urinate through their skin. Yeah, believe it or not. And lions do it pretty often. Sometimes up to 40 times a day, and I won't explain what it is, but I'll give you a guess. Yeah. And did you know there's an animal out there that has exactly as many teeth as you and I do? And it's an animal with a really long neck. Can you take a guess at that?
The African nations that puts those rings on their necks and extends them out really, really, really long?
That's not it. No.
Oh,
I'm going to let that go because everybody could get that one.
Is that it, right?
Okay. No, a giraffe.
Oh.
Quite a few lip balms contain a substance called salicylic acid. And this substance, actually what it does, it causes your lips to peel. So, which in turn causes you to go buy more lip balm.
I did know that one.
Because your lips
are
peeling.
I did know that one.
That is
true.
You did. You knew that.
I did. And I will buy lip balm that does not have that in it.
Oh, you devil, you. You do know stuff.
I'm pretty dumb, but not quite that dumb.
How many eyelids does a camel have?
Four.
Well, you're close. Camel has three eyelids.
I would expect that. Am I wrong in saying that probably one of them is translucent?
That I do not know. So I guess we got a subject that you can pretty much enlighten me on.
Well,
camel eyelids.
I would assume that there are two of them. One, basically, they have to have extra levels of protection for, like, sandstorms because they have to basically bunker down in those. And I don't know if you've ever been sandblasted, but little shards of glass hitting you in the eye probably wouldn't feel great.
I have a sandblaster for the work I do, the dental work I do, but I've never put my head inside the sandblaster while I've been sandblasting, so no, I haven't experienced that.
You should give it a shot, see what happens. Experiment.
Yeah, okay, I'll try that. Do you know the difference between a poisonous snake and a venomous snake?
I do not.
Well, a poisonous snake is one, if you eat it, you die. And a venomous snake, of course, is one where you die if it bites you.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay. The Alaskan wood frog spends the harsh Alaskan winter frozen solid, solid like a rock, with no heartbeat and no breathing, does not breathe. And Alaskan winters are long. When the thawing rays of the sun arrive within the spring, it simply unfreezes and hops away and does its little frog croaking stuff. How about that?
I did know that one was true as well.
It did.
I did. There's also a type of ground squirrel that does that in the Canadian and Alaskan tundras too. That does basically the same exact thing. They'll take about I think they take about one breath every like 30 to 40 minutes.
Wow.
And they get down to being as low as like 10 degrees Fahrenheit, their body temperatures.
Wow. What do you think the one thing a dinosaur never did?
Survived.
In the entire realm of dinosaur life.
Aced their SAT exams.
No, killed a human being.
Well, I don't know. There's crocodiles are considered living dinosaurs.
Did you know that Leonardo da Vinci was a vegetarian?
I did not.
And he was known to buy caged birds simply to let them free.
I did know that.
He was also questioning man's superiority over animals and his right to raise them for slaughter. This attitude was unheard of when he lived in his time. So he was way ahead of his time, I'd say, huh? He should be around now, yeah. Look at the pictures he'd paint now. There's a lot more, but maybe that's enough for tonight. One more. How many colors can your eye pick up? How many different colors can your eye see?
Three.
Actually, Nate, it's a few more than that. It's 10 million.
They are all variations of three, though. They're all variations of the three that we can detect. Red, blue, and yellow.
Steve Jobs. You ever heard of Steve Jobs? He passed away recently. Pretty young.
Steve Jobs, yes.
Jobs, whatever. And his father was an immigrant from Syria.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take my Johnny Carson hat off now and say that's enough of the tidbits.
All right. So we can move on to the last segment, which is our tips. If you don't mind, Rob, I will go first this week.
Good.
And my tip is going to be, I don't know a lot of your guys' schedules, obviously, but I think one of the important things to, if you want to get better at the game, one of the most important things to do is play as often as possible. If that just means, so, and kind of what I mean by that is, it's obviously great to have a 10-hour session anytime that you can have a 10-hour session. That's really, really good. But at least in my opinion, it is much more important to have 1 to 2 1-hour sessions a week and continuing to play every single day of the week. So even if that just means stopping at your local bar on the way home that has a couple pool tables between your work and your home and playing 4 racks and then going home, that is incredibly important in my opinion as to just keeping the arm loose and keeping those mechanics to where when you're coming back to the game, you're not spending the first hour of it just basically getting that muscle memory back to where you had a week ago and that was the last time that you played for your league night. If you could play 3 to 5 games a day at worst, that would go a long ways towards getting your body's mechanics, your body's natural movements down pat, to where when you do have those longer sessions, it's basically just getting better, not wasting a bunch of time getting those mechanics solid. So that's going to be my advice, is try to find somewhere between, maybe your work and home and just stopping there, if you could every day and just hit 4 racks and then go home.
Yeah, great idea. And then maybe have a couple things to drink, spread your money around a little bit, help the bar out. And then make your wife happy when you come home buzzed up. Yeah. Oh, stopped at the bar again, didn't you? Yeah. No, that's a good tip. This, half hour a day every day versus 10 hours once every 2 weeks. I totally agree with that. My tip is kind of weird. Have you ever been sharked, Nate?
I have been sharked. I think we all have at some point.
And how did that happen? How did you get sharked?
Well, the one that jumps to mind is I was playing in a tournament and I was down big. I was down, I believe, 6-1 in a race to 7. And I grinded all the way back to 6-5, and I was running out in 9-ball. And I believe I was shooting the 8-ball, and I was shooting the 8-ball right at my opponent. And right as I was on my backstroke, my opponent jumped up in the air, and I kind of caught my attention on it, and I ended up missing the 8-ball.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of those things where you can't really prep for that. I mean, how often does that happen? It's not like you can mentally strengthen yourself to where that isn't a problem.
Well, it has to happen because he has to be looking at you when it happens. You have to be lined up with your opponent somehow for that to happen. Yeah, that's happened a lot. I've seen that happen a lot.
Yep. Yep.
And it's just a haphazard thing. I mean, it's a circumstantial thing.
Yeah.
My tip is got to do with sharking, and it's a subtle tip. In other words, I don't try to figure out ways to shark people, but I have been sharked, and I have seen people do sharking. And the worst one that to me, and it wasn't, and it's not on purpose. It totally wasn't on purpose, but I could not play because of this particular thing. And the person I was playing was using chalk that squeaked.
Oh, that is annoying.
And he chalked up 6 or 7 squeaks between every single shot. And every squeak got me. So by the time it got to squeak number 5 or 6, I was done. Even if he missed, I couldn't shoot because I wanted to say to him, "Say, can I borrow your chalk?" but I didn't. I never said that, and I really wanted to, and I just lost terribly. I mean, this and he was a pretty good player, and could have beat me anyhow, maybe. But I didn't have a prayer with the squeaky chalk. So if you want to shark somebody, find some chalk that squeaks. I've never had a piece of chalk squeak, so I actually was sitting there. I couldn't believe it. I did say something to him. Like, where'd you find that piece of chalk? He looked at me like he really didn't know what I was talking about. Like it was just something, you know, all his chalk squeak for some reason. But that's a bad one, squeaky chalk.
Well, that's exciting.
So that's my tip. I don't
find
have any
squeaky
other
chalk.
Tips. Yeah, if you want to shark somebody, you find a piece of chalk that squeaks.
All right.
And then act like you don't know any better.
All right. Well, there you have it.
There you have it.
I guess with that, Rob, we can close out, and I will thank you again for joining me.
Okay, Nate. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this. And I don't know how much you'll learn this trip around the block, but maybe next week we'll do better on the learning aspect of the podcast. You can't be perfect every week, can you, buddy?
No, you just can't be.
Yeah.
So I guess, Rob, till next time.
Okay, buddy. Till we meet again.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, the Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.